So I guess the logic of the code, but see if you can hear me. Pantomime there, part of the talk. And so I don't know about you, but looking at the name of this workshop, my feeling is that something is being left out. So I think we should also talk about complexity, and in the interest of brevity, I'll just talk about the logical complexity. So I feel that the sort of the place where the study of coding theory and the theory of locally codable codes entered the complexity was sort of the initial impetus of 15 years ago, 20 years ago, was this result of Nissen and Widdowson showing that there was a not obviously false assumption under which you could get such strong pseudorandom generators that from them you could randomize in polynomial time all probabilistic algorithms. So for example, P equals BPP, meaning all probabilistic polynomial time. All decision problems with a probabilistic polynomial time algorithm can also be solved deterministically. But with those generators, more follows. Like you can also de-randomize all probabilistic approximation algorithms. You could de-randomize the German Sinclair Vygotda approximation algorithm for the permanent. Not just decision problems. And not obviously false assumption is that when you look at problems that can be decided in exponential time, like SAT or any problem requiring linear space or even more, among those problems, there are some that, so whenever you try to write a sub-exponential size circuit to solve the problem, the circuit will perform very badly. Like when you look at the random input, the circuit will give the right answer not really more than half of the time. So half. We only have some exponential small advantage for that. So although this assumption seemed vaguely plausible, it didn't have any candidate at the time. Like there was no one that we could think of that was likely to have this kind of RSQ problems. And that motivated a more than 10 years long program to try to reduce this assumption to something more immediately plausible. And these are questions in average case complexity. Basically, we have the desire of showing that under plausible assumptions there is some problem whose average case complexity is exponential in a very strong sense. In sub-exponential time, you cannot get a sub-exponential advantage over guessing the value of the function. And so what I will describe are ways in which we can prove that such a strong assumption follows just from worst case assumptions, which are standard conjectures, but also that any way of proving those relations between worst case and average case for exponential time problems, as long as we prove those relations through, we'll see what it means, black box reductions, we are always constructing locally codable codes with certain properties. So all complexity techniques developed through those 10 years have some qualitative interpretation, but also results in coding theory can be used to give alternative proofs of those complexity. So once more, what's a locally decodable code? We start from a message. A locally decodable code is an encoding, which will be robust to errors. So it means that if this encoding is transmitted through an OSI channel and some bounded number of bits are flipped, we can still come up with a decoding procedure that will be able in sublinear time to decode single bits of the message by only looking at a small part of the graph code. So with a decoder, local decoder gets an input tree, meaning we want to know what's the third bit of the message. Selects a randomness, looks at some bits of the corrupted encoding, and that's hopefully with good probability says one. The third bit of the message. So this doesn't seem to have much to do, unless I've seen the connection before, with average case complexity. But So one can, in fact, get so early results on average case complexity can be immediately rephrased in terms of looking at the codable codes with some interesting parameters. Some early work in the 90s, if you can translate into that language, gives error coding codes where the length of the encoding is polynomial in the length of the message, but you could even make it n to the 1 plus epsilon for every epsilon. The running time and the query complexity of the decoder is polylogarithmic in the length of the message, so it won't be 3 or 4 as the case of locally decodable codes that most resemble private information retrieval, but it will be considerably efficient compared to the length of the message. And they will be able to correct some noticeable but not very large fraction of errors, some one of the Poisson fraction of errors. And one, they just read Miller codes. So one thinks of the message as defining a polynomial with properly chosen parameters, and then one evaluates the polynomial at all points in the space, multivariate polynomial. So here's the some application to average case complexity. So in the locally decodable code, we think of the method. So what do we want to do in average case complexity? We want to start from a safe assumption, like the assumption that there exists some problems that are hard in the worst case, like standard complexity-static assumption. And then define a new problem that is hard on average, and that can be used into the Nissan-Lipperson theorem. So that's the goal. Start from problem that is hard in worst case, construct a new problem, doesn't matter if it's artificial, that is hard on average. And we say we have a locally decodable code. So now we're going to think of, so we'll construct this new problem input length by input length. So we fix some input length. Now, we look at the truth table of the original problem, the one that was worst case hard on inputs of some fixed length. So now that's the description of this problem, just what is the output on every given input, is just a 2 to the n bit string, where n is n to the input that we're thinking about. So let's apply a locally decodable code. Now we obtain a new bit string, probably bigger. Now let's think of it as the truth table of a new Boolean function, or the description of a new decision problem, probably on slightly longer inputs. So if this was of length 2 to the n, this would be polynomial 2 to the n, so it would be 2 to the order of n. This would describe some new problem on inputs of length order of n, be 3n. So now what we know about the local decoder is that whenever you give to it oracle access to a binary string, which is a good approximation of a valid decoder, in polylogarithmic time in the length of this, so in time polynomial in n, the way we're thinking of this as being of length 2 to the n, we can reconstruct every bit that we want of the original language. So this means that with a local decoder, given oracle access to an oracle, which is good on average approximation of this new language, we can compute the original language on all inputs. So that's the worst case average case reduction. We just say, so this will be our new language. We need to do this input length by input length. So that defines new language in every input length. And the proof that this new language is hard on average just says, well, suppose it isn't. So there is some circuit that computes a good approximation of the new language. Now run the local decoder using sort of as an oracle this hypothetical small circuit. Then the local decoder plus the small circuit together are a small computation, they are a small circuit. And what do? On every input, it computes the corresponding bit of the truth table of L. Like on input X tells you whether X is in the language or not. So now you have contradicted the initial assumption that L was hard in the worst case. Is this connection clear? That's pretty much all I wanted to say. Yeah.
So the only thing you said is that you said that the coding should be like linear, like from 2 to the n should be 2 to the 3n. It seems like this works even if you go from 2 to the n to 2 to the like n square.
Yeah, you get something non-trivial even if you go, yeah. So
the original result that you mentioned was like, you know, this exponent 2 to the order of n.
Yeah, so for the Nissan-Lipperson application, you want this truly exponential hardness, like 2 to the epsilon n. So if you start from a problem on inputs of length n, and you get a new problem on inputs of length n square. But then this problem has hardness 2 to the epsilon n. In terms of the new input length, it becomes 2 to the epsilon root n, so that's not good enough. But qualitatively, I say if you're interested in just in super polynomial hardness, even if this was n squared, this would be great. So even if the, in terms of codes, if you were mapping n bits into n to the log n bits, that would be fine. Okay, so that's the connection between codes and average case complexity. Okay, so whenever you have a code, you define the new language, and the connection is just that the encoding is the new language, and the decoding is reduction.
Okay.
Yes?
This is a non-uniform case, right? Can you do a uniform case reduction?
So here I said circuit, but actually if you have an algorithm, here there is good on average for L prime, the local decoder is also an algorithm, so the whole thing will be uniform. In a little while we get to a point where actually there is a problem of non-uniformity, but so far this result also gives uniform reductions. So with the codes that were defined in the 90s, although the levels were slightly different, so what we'll get is that, assuming some worst-case hard problem in exponential time, we can find some hard-on-average problem in exponential time. The hardness will be more or less the same. And what we get is that for every, say this hardness is exponential, here also we get more or less an exponential. So what we get is that for every circuit of sub-exponential size, we get a noticeable fraction of errors. Okay? So that's something, but it's not what we wanted. We didn't want a noticeable fraction of errors. We wanted to say the fraction of errors is half, the advantage is exponentially small. The fraction of error is something like half minus an exponential factor. But it's sort of going in the right direction. And so that gap between noticeable and the half minus exponential was filled in the following 4 years with a completely different approach from the one I'm going to talk about. I think somewhere, maybe more in the mid-90s than in the late-90s, it was also observed that one could get also polynomial encoding length and polylogarithmic decoding and correct a constant fraction of errors in the language of locally decodable codes. So this means that in a language of average case complexity, you can get those problems such that for every sub-exponential circuit, the circuit will fail on a constant fraction of inputs. So that's getting closer to... But there is a fundamental limitation to this kind of approach, which is that, so whenever you have an error-correcting code, binary error-correcting code, there will always be two code words whose agreement is about half, So now, if you have a decoding procedure that always uniquely corrects a certain number of errors, this number of errors cannot be more than n over 4. Right? Because look at what this procedure is doing. If you give to it the middle point between those two code words, it must exist a distance n over 2. Well, if the decoder cannot know whether that string is coming from one code word or the other code word, so decoding uniquely with n over 4 errors or more is impossible. So it means when it comes to average case complexity with this kind of approach, it seems you cannot go beyond saying every sub-exponential circuit will fail on a quarter of the inputs. Well, again, we wanted to get up to half. Right, so something that was known in coding theory about, I mean, this is also an issue in coding theory. You would like to have codes that can correct as large a fraction of errors as possible. So the fact that there is this bottleneck at one quarter is a concern. So a solution known in coding theory that overcomes this bottleneck is to relax the requirement that we have on the decoder. Instead of saying we want the decoder to find out what the original code word was conditioned on the number of errors being small, we will say we want the decoder to find a list of possible decodings which will contain the original message condition on the number of errors being small. Right, so maybe here we have some message, you at the encoding, we get many more corruptions than before. And then the decoding algorithm doesn't have enough information to find the message. But what it can do is to, I mean, conceivably, and it is possible with certain parameters, what it can do is to output a list of possible decodings with the property that the original message is in the list. Like here, I guess it's the second one. I mean, of course, it could output all the n-bit strings. So this would be interesting when the other list is really small, definitely sub-exponential. So it's easy to show non-constructively that codes where at least those lists are small exist. To get efficient algorithms that find those lists is considerably harder. And so the first algorithm in breakthrough was work of Madhusud around 96, 97, when it improved with Venkat Guru's wife. And what they get actually more than that, but what they get, which is in the ballpark of what we need for the average case application, is to say, so say we want to correct from half minus epsilon errors. So we can do that with the code, where the encoding length is still polynomial, depending on epsilon. The decoding is also polynomial time. And the size of the list is actually just dependent on this epsilon. It doesn't even grow with epsilon. So it's very small. So if you want to use this notion of list decoding in average case complexity, the conceptual difficulty that we need to overcome is exactly now what we mean by a polylogarithmic time list decoding algorithm. So those are polynomial time list decoding algorithms. They don't give immediately worst case to average case reductions, because if you apply the framework that I described before, you would get exponential time reductions. They wouldn't prove anything. So we need again to come to a notion of local decoding for list decoding. But it cannot be something like the local decoder look at the message, say, what's the third bit? It's okay, it's in the following list. So the right definition might seem a bit artificial, but actually it's, I mean, if you think by yourself what a reasonable definition could be, you have to end up with something like this. Will be that the local decoder will output a list of decodings. But so it runs in polylogarithmic time, so it cannot actually output the strings. What it will output will be a list of compact representations of the various decodings. And the form of those compact representations are local decoding algorithms themselves. So it will output this list of algorithms and say, you know, the correct decoding is computed by one of those algorithms in the list. Or equivalently, the local decoder is given, so here we come to the issue of uniformity. The local decoder will be given some advice that depends on possibly on the message and on the pattern of errors. Basically, the advice says, you know, you're going to compute a list, and the right element is the 15th element in the list, something like this. So the local decoder is given the advice, it interacts with this thing, and then outputs a local decoding algorithm. And then the local decoding algorithm gets queries on the form, what's the bit of the message, and now it answers those queries correctly. So the ambiguity about the list is captured by the short advice given to the I mean, we don't need to think of those two entities as separate. We might just think that it's one entity gets the advice and it's number three. But in this way, it's quite clear that the advice can depend on the message and the errors, but must not depend on the query that the local decoder gets.
Should the local list decoder depend on the corrupted string? Because he puts this double error. Or does he need to know the corrupted string?
Actually, in many constructions, it doesn't. If it did, it would be fine in the applications. So one could conceive, it seems too bad that the non-constructions don't use the string. That should be a way of making it better. So any question about this model of local list decoding? Yeah.
This
teams
or advice, is this supposed to be short or not?
Yeah, so that's like in list decoding. There we want the list to be as small as possible because so the shorter the list, the more information we have about the message. And so also here we would like the advice to be as small as possible. Maybe even constant depending only on epsilon. Okay, so let's see that this notion captures what we need in a reduction from worst case to average case, or can be used in a reduction from worst case to average case. So let's say we have a local list decodable code as before, and we have some language that we assume to be hard on average, like SAT. So we apply the encoding, so this is SAT on inputs of length 10. We apply the encoding, we get this string of length 2 to the order of n. We think of it as a language. And we want to argue that it's hard on average. Right? So we say, suppose it weren't hard on average. So there would be some small circuit that has some reasonable advantage in computing the string. So the computation of the circuit, what the circuit does on every input, can be seen as a corrupted encoding with a bounded number of errors. So with some short advice, we run the list decoder with Oracle access to the circuit, or maybe to visualize it with Oracle access to the truth table of the circuit. But in reality, it will just be connected to the circuit itself. It outputs a local decoder. And now this local decoder, on input, an entry of this truth table, computes the language on that entry. So it solves the language everywhere. So the connection of all those things together is giving a small circuit whose size depends on the advice, on the size of the circuit, on the complexity of the local decoder that solves the language everywhere. But all those things will be polynomial. This is assumed to be sub-exponential, so the whole thing will be sub-exponential. And so we have contradicted our assumption on the worst-case complexity of the language. So that means that the new artificial language we defined was, in fact, as hard on average as assumed.
Jacob, the advantage there was cap plus 2 to the minus cn. The least is too long. I mean, 2 to the minus cn square or whatever, polynomial amount of epsilon. That's been not explained at all.
No, so, right, so the epsilon is something like 2 to some small constant times n. So the size of the list will be 2 to some other small constant times n. So things will have to be adjusted. If L is assumed to have worst case complexity 2 to the n over 10, we'll be shooting for maybe 2 to the n over 40.
Okay.
So one can pretty much replicate the parameters of, well, not really replicate, but in this loose way in which I said them before, they can be replicated, the parameters of the kind of non-local decoder. So the encoding will be polynomial in n over epsilon, and the decoder runs in polylogarithmic time, and the size of the list depends only on epsilon. That really doesn't matter too much in the application because sort of n will be n and epsilon will be exponential in n. So any dependency in n is really irrelevant. But if you wanted to prove, for whatever reason, average case complexity within, say, 49% of errors instead of half passive percent exponential, that would require only very few bits of non-uniformity. Right, so that's all the non-uniformity we need in the construction. If you want to prove hardness, if you want to prove every sub-exponential circuit makes half minus epsilon errors, the amount of non-uniformity in the reduction is just log 1 over epsilon bits, picking one element from a list of size poly 1 over epsilon. So, and so that's the conclusion that we can get after setting all the elements right. If we have an exponential circuit lower bound for a proven exponential time, we can get exponential average case complexity bound for growing exponential time. And so that's precisely what was needed for the Nissan Widison application. So we got, because BDP, the randomization of randomized approximation algorithms. I mean, this we knew. There was a 10 years line of work done by Fritz Pagliazzo and Annie Pagliazzo and Winterson that had proved this kind of worst case to average case connection with a very different argument that relied on it's called the XOR lemma. So if you remember, the point, our point of departure where we started talking about codes was this stuff from the early 90s on getting for every step exponential circuit, it makes a noticeable fraction of errors. And we have to go from there to nearly a half. So the XOR lemmas are ways of starting from this kind of noticeable average case hardness and pushing it very close to half. So now what I want to argue is that in fact, I mean, although the techniques are very different, there is a fundamental connection between those two styles of proofs for this theorem. Right, so this is the theorem that worst case exponential complexity implies average case exponential complexity. So this is actually so worth mentioning more and more explicitly in a few papers between 2002 and 2003, that any black box, and we'll get to it, proof of this theorem, is constructing error-correcting codes that meet our definition of being locally least equivalent. Right, so let's see what it means for this theorem to be proved with a reduction. Okay? So what do we need to prove? We start from a language L, and we define a language L prime. So our first assumption on the way the proof works is that we don't use any property of the language L. We just describe the transformation of the worst case language into the average case hard language. So that's just a mapping of two to them bit strings into new bit strings. And then we argue by reduction. We say we have defined in some way this new language. Now suppose towards a contradiction that there is a sub-exponential circuit that has some advantage. Right, so now we describe a reduction, possibly a non-uniform reduction that gets some advice. And this reduction, by using this circuit, contradicts the assumption we have about L. So it computes L everywhere. So now you see that as long as in our argument we're really able to define a language L prime for every language L that we started from, then we didn't say, okay, we start from L being sat and now we start using properties of sat. But if the transformation is generic, this reduction R is precisely a local least decoder. That's what it's doing. It's given access to a code. So we have an encoding. This reduction is given access to oracle access to a corrupted encoding, a corrupted version of a valid encoding. It's given some advice, and now it's locally computing the original string everywhere. No, but what we can say is, okay, suppose somebody comes up with a new proof of this theorem with a black box reduction. Then we can ask them, okay, so your proof, what amount of advice is using? And how does the input length of the new problem relate to the input length of the old problem? So we can examine the proof and see how those parameters work out. And from there, we can see how good is this proof as an error correcting code. I mean, every proof will come with some quantitative version of those parameters, and maybe some proofs will be worse and some proofs will be better. But something that we gain from this connection is that, so there are two ways in which now we can use this connection. One is that, sort of the underlying point is that we studied average case complexity for 20 to 30 years. Error-correcting codes have been studied for 60 years, so three times more things are known for codes. So So for example, there are many impossibility results for error coding codes, which for some reason are called upper bounds. So we really know, I mentioned it before, that you cannot do, for binary code, unique decoding with more than a quarter fraction of errors. So we will go back to that limitation that we said before, that if we have reductions that use no advice, they cannot prove average case hardness beyond these quarter fraction of errors. Also, if we want to correct off minus epsilon errors, we can do that with least decoding, but it's also known that the least size must grow with epsilon. But must grow polynomial in epsilon. So this means that any black box reduction must use at least this much advice, which matches what we do in the, with Madhu and Salim. In fact, if you go back to the impossible with some proof, I mean, not that it's fair because that wasn't an issue in the argument, but their advice is exponentially more. So it grows with 1 over epsilon instead of log 1 over epsilon. So if you wanted to use that as a code, you get a code that, where if you want to correct half minus epsilon errors, your list size would be exponentially 1 over epsilon. And quasi polynomial in n. Would be something like n to the log n times 2 to the 1 over epsilon squared. Another thing is that when the advice is so small, in certain special cases where then you have to start using non-black box tricks, the advice can be completely removed. I mean, there isn't anything particularly insightful here. Like, suppose I give you a polynomial number of circuits and I tell you one of them solves SAT exactly. Right? So now you know how to solve SAT. You do a decision to search reduction, you use all the circuits. If one of them finds an assignment, there is an assignment. None of them finds an assignment, there is no assignment. So for exp, there is something, for person exponential time, there are things called instant checkers that do something similar, where if you have a polynomial number of circuits, one of them is right, you can get the right answer, because you sort of can distinguish good circuits from bad circuits. But you couldn't have done that with the impossible with some proof, because the number of cases you had to look at was exponential. Well, in our case, it's polynomial. More impossibility. Manuele Viola proved that you cannot get good least decodable codes. So forget about the decoding. Just codes where short lists exist. Such codes cannot be computed in AC0 if the parameters are in a certain way. Now, when you scale things exponentially, you see that if you have those black box worst case to average case reductions, the encoding cannot be done in a polynomial hierarchy. So this means you cannot say, OK, now I have some hard worst case problem in NP. I'm going to get a hard average case problem in NP by this kind of transformation. This is incomparable to the kind of arguments where you say, if there was a worst case average case reduction, the polynomial hierarchy would collapse, because in that case, we make no black box assumption on the way the transformation works. But it's further evidence that it's very hard to do worst case average case corrections in NP. Right, so the other way in which one can look at these connections is to say, well, let's look at the impossible with some proof and other proofs. They are purely complex quadratic results, but they are in some way talking about codes. How good are those codes? So they're not very good, but especially because of this exponential dependency in the list size. Although they can be pushed a little to make this dependency depend only on epsilon, to make the encoding be quadratic. So it's a genuinely new construction of codes that's coming from a place where one wouldn't have expected them. And really, it is this issue of the exponential list size that's the major limitation of using proofs of the XOR lemma as error grating codes. So very recently, in Palazzo, Jaswal and Cabanet showed that it is possible, at least in some cases, to get this list down to polynomial, but then there is some exponential loss somewhere else in the code. So that's still in the encoding length. So for every constant epsilon, they get an encoding that is polynomial, but the exponent of the polynomial depends on epsilon. So if you want epsilon to be 1%, maybe the length of the encoding will be n to the 1,000. So notice, now here we're talking about locating the local codes in a regime that is completely different from the one that is useful in private information retrieval. You're not saying, so what can we do with two queries, three queries, like saying, what can we do with polylog queries? But we really think of them as codes, so the encoding length is quite critical. So if one works out non-constructions, you can get the encoding length to be linear, which is really the only type of codes that are accepted by probabilists. And the decoding time will be n to the epsilon. So you can make this epsilon smaller by making the constant of the big O larger. I think it's a really good lower bound question to see whether linear encoding length, or maybe even something like 3 times n, is possible with polylog number of queries or log number of queries. And in the best that follows from the work with Jonathan Katz is that you can get the log n or log n lower bound on the queries if you want the encoding length to be linear. You could get such codes if one could randomize the proof of the XOLM in a very strong sense. So this is really a short way of explaining what it means, but it's a well-defined technical question. It's very interesting. And also, such proofs would have interesting average case complexity conclusions. That's it.